Hi, everybody. I'm really excited to be here at my first ApacheCon, talking to you guys today about configuration management and how we're using it at MasterCard today. So before we dive into it, I just want to ask a question. So how many of you guys are working at an organization where you have at least a single website or an application or more than one running on at least one instance of Tomcat or HTTPD? All right, just keep your hand raised. How about 10? How about 100? How about over 1,000? All right, so I'm at least in the right room. We got one. That's okay. But that's the scale we're talking about today, that scale of hundreds to 1,000s, and how do you manage those configurations? Okay, so before we really dive into it, I want to talk about who am I. So, as I said, my name is Steve Sanders. I'm lead systems platform architect on the web platform team at MasterCard. I've been spending the last 3 years working on exactly this topic, transforming MasterCard from manually configuring all of our Tomcat and HTTPDs to be machine managed by a configuration management tool. I've been at MasterCard for 9 years and in the industry as a whole for 12 years. So before we start to kind of describe the problem that we were finding and we're trying to solve here, I'm going to talk a little bit about my career journey because that kind of helps set the stage. So when I first started at MasterCard 9 years ago, I was a projects web administrator. And what that entailed was working with our design teams who worked with our developers. And they would get the requirements for all the infrastructure that needed to go into these instances of Tomcat or whatever the case is. They would produce a technical architecture diagram, which was essentially a fancy Visio diagram that would show, you know, server A is going to have Apache HTTPD installed onto it. It's going to proxy requests down to a JVM. That JVM might be talking to three different databases. It's going to call it to an external API, and it's going to call this internal service. So then once I had that technical architecture diagram, we'd begin the process of actually building that infrastructure. So logging onto the host and running some scripts to actually build that container. And that script would give me a basic vanilla instance. I would then go to the application team, take their code, deploy it, and begin the long process of configuring that container to work with their code, configuring data sources, setting up heap sizes and troubleshooting with them and making sure everything works, and then, of course, documenting it and then throwing it over the wall to our operations team. So I did that for a few years, and then I went to the other side of the house and worked on the operations side. So I got a good view of everything that happened. And one thing you find is that that documentation that was originally written is never correct because it's 3 years later and something has changed. We've added a new authentication mechanism. They've added a new data source. They've ripped something out. So that documentation is never right. And we don't have any source of truth to tell me what is correct about that configuration, how it should be configured from environment to environment or from application to application. So let's go ahead and actually kind of dive down into the problem. So the first one, it's pretty obvious. We've just got too many containers. As I said in the beginning, MasterCard has over 5,000 installations of Tomcat and HTTPD combined. So how do you manage all of those? Chris had a great point in his securing Tomcat about the best way to stay up to date is to, or the best way to stay secure is to stay up to date on your Tomcat containers. Well, if I've got 1,000 Tomcats and I need to upgrade to the latest version, I got to put in 1,000 tickets and wait for all these people to log onto the boxes, make those updates, and test them, and cross our fingers that it hopefully works. And that wastes hundreds of hours a lot of times. So you just got too many containers to manage by hand. It's impossible. The next one, when we were really looking at this problem, we found that a huge significant portion of our downtime in production was caused by simple human error and undocumented changes. Somebody logs onto a host to troubleshoot an issue. Maybe they flip on debug to troubleshoot that, and oh crap, they forget to turn it off. Or they bump the heap size up way too high than it needs to be, and a month later it causes issues. So these undocumented changes and human errors were causing downtime in our production environments. And lastly, those undocumented changes and those things cause configuration drift. So I've got a cluster of instances, and they might all be configured differently, but they're running the same application. Well, that's going to give me uneven performance. That's going to lead to more downtime in production. So not only do you have configuration drift between environments, from my development to my staging to my production, but even worse, you've got it within the environment. I've got 10 Tomcat instances that make up my production cluster for an application, and they might all be configured differently because of undocumented changes and human errors. So we don't want that. So we needed to find a way to consistently apply our standards for security hardening and the applications' specific configurations that they needed. So that configuration drift is our last problem. So how do we go about trying to solve this? So using configuration management tool and modern DevOps practices. So when I say using configuration management, it's using a config management tool. And there's a ton of tools out there that you can use. There's Ansible, there's Salt, there's Puppet, there's Chef. There's a ton out there. They all functionally do a lot of the same things. They have their pluses and minuses. So it's important if you go down this road, research them, look into them, see what fits with your security model and what fits with your organization. But the important thing is using these configuration management tools to apply configuration states consistently across an environment. Next, you're going to need a pipeline to promote those configuration states and the code that drives those configuration states. At MasterCard, we chose Jenkins. We use Jenkins for a whole host of things, but in the cases that we're talking about today, we're going to be talking about our cookbook integration pipeline and our configuration state promotion pipeline. And that will essentially promote that code and those configuration states to through the environments after doing tests. And finally, we wanted to have some test-driven development. So if I need to make a change to that code or that configuration state, I need to be able to test it in a lower environment. I don't want to just shove that out into production. And I want to be able to do that even before my development environment, preferably locally, if I can, before I'm pushing that code out to even my lowest environment. We want to have our lowest environment look as close as we can to our higher environment so that we can reliably test these things out. So let's dive a little bit down into some details here. So the configuration management tool that we chose was Chef. And just to give a little bit of an aside on how Chef works, there is a Chef client installed on all your nodes, and that Chef client talks to a Chef server. And when every 30 minutes, that Chef client is going to do a converge on the node, and that's when he phones home to Chef server and he says, "Hi, Chef server, my name is node XYZ, what do you got for me?" And Chef server is going to reply with a run list, which is just a collection of cookbooks that he needs to run. And it's also going to come back with the configuration state. And that configuration state comes in the form of a JSON. So then the cookbook is going to look at those attributes and programmatically apply those configurations to my Tomcat instance, my HTTPD instance, and even your OS settings, my application level settings, all of those things. We're talking today about middleware and Tomcat, but it can be used for the whole gamut, full stack you can do with Chef. So once we picked Chef, we decided to go with to develop some model-driven cookbooks. And when I say model-driven cookbooks, I don't want teams who are defining these configuration states to have to know all the nitty-gritty details of, all right, how do I set up a data source? I don't want them to know that they need to go in context.xml and define a resource, set up their pool. I just want them to say, hey, I want to connect to a data source. Here's the connection URL. Here's the credentials. And then my cookbook takes care of the rest. I don't want them to know that we use a special wrapper script to handle startup or any of the other nitty-gritty details of configuring Tomcat, because they're developers. I want them to focus on their code. So they describe the model that they want this Tomcat instance to use, and they also and their HTTPD instance that they want to configure. So what are the end goals of my cookbook? Both our HTTPD and our Tomcat cookbooks follow this same model, but I'm going to dive more into the Tomcat one today. So the first thing we're going to do is install the users that our Tomcat instance is going to run on. Then we're going to create the file systems, our Catalina base and our Catalina home, and our web admin package file system, all the needed file systems that we expect to see at a MasterCard host. It's going to put my supporting packages on the host, Java, the binary distribution, our web admin package that has a bunch of handy utilities and scripts and things that we all expect. Next, it's going to actually grab those binary distributions from our internal Artifactory. It's going to pull that down, unzip it on this system, and then it's going to really go to configure the instance. And that's really where the kind of the rubber meets the road on these cookbooks. So after we get through all those setup things, we're going to lay down a set of templates. And cookbooks are written in Ruby in Chef, so we're using ERB templates. And we're going to lay down all the files that you would normally see on a Tomcat instance, your server.xml, your context.xml. All the things that you're used to seeing are now a template, and that configuration state, those JSON files that the developers have defined, are going to be pushed through that template. So our instance is going to be configured the way that they've described in that configuration state. So once it's done that, it's going to bring the container up, and it's going to actually deploy the application team's code. It's going to pull that down from our local Artifactory and plug their WAR file or their static content into the web apps directory. So this is all great, but what if I want to change something about my cookbook? I want to change a default attribute. For example, I want to upgrade to 8.5.4.5, which we're going to do later on today. I want to be able to test that locally. I don't want to just shove that out into production and update everyone willy-nilly. So Chef provides a really cool utility called Test Kitchen. And you don't have to just use Chef with Test Kitchen. It can be used with Ansible. It can be used with Puppet or any of the other configuration management tools. But what that allows me to do is define a set of test fixtures and then spin up a Docker container and run those test fixtures on them. So, for example, we're going to see here in a few minutes, we've defined a bunch of test fixtures. So I have my default instance, which defines a regular old vanilla Tomcat container with all of our hardening specs, and it's going to deploy our test application. And once it does that, and it builds that container on that Docker, or it builds the instance on that Docker container, it's going to run an inspect profile, and it's going to check, are all of those CIS hardening guidelines applied? But also, it's going to test that container and make sure it's performing the way that we expect at MasterCard. So beyond our default one, we also have a test fixture for an instance that's connecting to a database, one that's using PKCS 11 hardware certificates, one that's using our custom SAML security login module, and on and on and on. All the different things that we expect all the various applications at MasterCard to run, we're going to test against those. So if I want to change to 8545 Tomcat, I can do that and test against all those scenarios and know it's going to pass and these applications aren't going to fail. So if you're listening closely, I probably said something that, you know, piqued your interest, or I hope it did. We allow our developers to define those configuration states. Before we got into this world, that was unheard of at MasterCard. We had our developers over here, and we had our web administration team over here, and the web administration team dictated the configuration and the setup. We would work together. We would say, yes, okay, we need to configure it this way, but really, the developers don't know a ton about the JVM or the guts of it and how it works, but we allow now the developer to do that, and that gives them a really, really quick way to spin up containers and get out to market really quickly. But we do have some guardrails in place. Within that cookbook, we have a schema, and it's a JSON schema. So we inspect that incoming configuration state that they give us against that schema. So they can't, for example, they can override the TLS protocols on their connector, but they can't define SSL v3. I don't want to do that because I know that's bad. It's going to break them. We have a whole bunch of guardrails and tests that they can't apply or things that they can and can't do within that schema. And we're nice to them. We provide this handy schema viewer that they can view on their browser. They can click through any of these and see the actual format of the JSON that it needs to be in. They can click these buttons. They expand. They see all the attributes that are available to them in server configuration and the loggers that are available to them, how they set system properties, and on and on and on. So we try to be nice to them, and they can view this, and they know what they can set in their configuration state and how it should look. So what does this system do for operations and for our developers? So first, build, config, and maintenance are completely self-service. Like I said, the application teams are defining those configuration states. So if they want to add a new data source, if they want to increase their heap size in production, they can do that. They don't need to put in a ticket with operations. They just update their configuration state in their source control, and away they go. In 30 minutes, when Chef converges, it's applied in production. So we also get a reliable source of truth, and this is a huge, huge benefit for operations. I don't need to worry about looking up the documentation for this application to know, yes, it needs to be calling this data source. Yes, it needs to have our SAML login module configured. I can just go to source control. I can look at their JSON configuration state and say, yep, that's what they got. And I know it's going to remain consistent from dev to stage to production because I can see it in source control. And I can see the changes over time that they've applied through their commit history and their pull requests. So as I said earlier, too, we also get those security and operational guardrails. Me, the operations person, and the developers know that they can't apply SSL v3 because that JSON schema won't allow them. As soon as they try to do it and the converge happens, it's going to stop. It's not going to allow them to go any further, and it won't apply that bad change. So we also get that test-driven approach to promoting those changes. Like I said, I don't want to just push out a change to my default attributes to a config. I want to test it first. so we can test it before we get into production. So we're not just guessing and hoping this works. Finally, we completely eliminate configuration drift and those undocumented changes. Because say if someone does flip on debug when they're troubleshooting an issue, in the next 30 minutes when Chef converges, it's going to erase that change and roll it back for us, which is really, really nice. And we don't have that configuration drift because it's running every 30 minutes on every single host within that environment. I know they're all going to look consistently the same because that same configuration state and the same code is applying that configuration state across the environment, across the board. So, like I said, we're going to do a bit of a demo, and I'm going to commit a couple of cardinal sins here of doing a presentation. I am last minute changing my demo, and we can blame Chris because he inspired me with the, we need to stay up to date, and that's how we stay secure. And so to do that, we're going to do live. My original demo was a video, pre-canned video, but that's boring. We're going to do it live right here. John Frederick has also inspired me as well with his. So let's go ahead and jump over here. This is my configuration management SDK host. This is local on our DevCloud network, so this isn't live.
That terminal does not support.
Oh no. It does not. Is this completely impossible to read? Well, we'll just have to plow ahead here. The perils of a live demo.
It's slightly okay, basically.
All right, so I'm in the root directory of my cookbook, and I'm going to run a kitchen list command, and this shows us all the test fixtures that I've defined within my cookbook. So as I said, we have this whole entire set. These are all of the things that I expect any container at MasterCard, they should be able to do. These are the different scenarios they're going to run through. We have our default ones running on Java 11, Java 7, one running on Docker, one running on a VRA platform, and then we've got PKCS 11 hardware certs, one that messes around with session cookies and connects to a data source, and on and on and on. Normally when I make a change, I would do test all of these, of course, because I want to make sure all scenarios work, but for the sake of time, we're just going to check our default Docker one. So I've already ran a converge, again, to save time. But what the converge means is that Docker container has spun up, and it has configured my test container, and it's deployed my test application. And our current version that we're running on is 8.5.4.3 of Tomcat. So before I actually make my change, though, I want to make sure that this is working the way I expect. So I'm going to run a kitchen verify default Docker, and this is going to run that set of inspect tests that I talked about earlier. So now what I'm testing for is this behaving the way I expect? We're going to hit that test application with curl, and we're going to run a few things. Can we set a custom logger? And then down here on the bottom, we can see, for example, that does not set the X powered by HTTP header. That's a CIS hardening guideline. We actually took the CIS guidelines and programmatically defined them in InSpec, and we test them each and every time. So now I know my default works with 8.5.4.3. Great. I want to try 8.5.4.5. So I'm going to go ahead and open up my default attributes of this cookbook. And we can see here our default attributes are defined as Ruby hashes. So I'm going to update this hash key, my version, and my package to be 8.5.4.5. Great. So now we're going to run another converge. And as I said, when Chef runs, if it sees that that configuration state already matches, it's going to go ahead and skip through. It's going to see that most of the configuration is the same. But it's going to see, hey, this is running 8.5.4.3, but you've told me the default attribute is .4.5. So it's going to update that for us. So what it's doing right now is it's actually transferring my cookbook and all the dependent cookbooks to this Docker instance. That takes a second. Okay, you see those are all pulled up. And we'll see a bunch of things that say up to date, up to date, up to date, because they're already there. It's only going to change one thing for me and then restart the instance on Docker. So we can see it's restarting. Right here we see it's removed my Catalina home, and it's actually added a new one to go to 8.5.4.5. And we've restarted. Great, it's running, but is it still behaving the same way? Is it still passing my CIS tests? Fingers crossed. Yes. Okay. We know that at MasterCard, we can run 8545 with our tester application. My Tomcat instance still behaves the way I expect it to. All CIS guidelines are still passing. Okay, I've got it locally. What do I do now? Now I'm going to create a pull request because I want to update this attribute. So I've actually already done that earlier today. So we use Bitbucket. I've created the pull request here. Come on. There we go. Created this. My friend on my team, Fred Wells, has already approved it. That was nice of him. So we see we changed the default attributes, and I am a good citizen of Earth, so I have added an entry to my changelog and bumped my metadata up. Great. So once my team approves this and merges it, that's going to kick off my Jenkins pipeline, that cookbook integration pipeline. So I would love to do a live demo of the pipeline, but that takes several hours to run. But... And I'd show you a sped up video or something like that, but that's boring too. So I'm going to show you an end result here. Let's go back to the presentation. So my testing is done. My pull request is done. It's been merged. My pipeline is going to get automatically kicked off here. So this is the end result of the pipeline. You can see all these various stages that it runs through. So let's talk about what each one is. So the first one, we're going to generate the artifact. It's going to pull down my cookbook onto a Jenkins agent. And that Jenkins agent is that exact, it's a CMSDK server, just like I was doing in my demo. So once it pulls that down, it's going to validate what it just pulled down. It's going to use a utility from Chef called FoodCritic. Yes, everything is food related when you're dealing with Chef. It's silly, but it is what it is. It's going to check things like syntax and a few other base things. Is there a README file defined? Does it have a valid metadata? All those various things. And then we've also defined a few custom FoodCritic rules ourselves to make sure that people are following things. Because remember, this isn't just Tomcat or HTTPD cookbooks. We have hundreds of cookbooks at MasterCards that application teams have written to define their application configuration. So we have to validate all of those and make sure they're following the right same standards. So once it passes all my FoodCritic rules, it's going to do the integration test. And that's exactly what I just showed. It's going to run that Kitchen Converge and Kitchen Verify on all the test fixtures that I have defined. So can this cookbook do what it says it can do on the tin? Is it going to pass all those guidelines that I said it should pass? So once it passes all the test fixtures and it runs through all those inspect tests, okay, you can go to dev. Great. Now we're going to run through compliance testing. So compliance testing is essentially a copy of integration testing, but instead of spinning up the Docker image that I defined in my kitchen testing, we're going to use a compliant image that our Unix team actually uses to provision real VMs in our staging and production environments. Exact same thing. Okay, same image. It's going to run that, it's going to spin that up, and it's going to apply my same test fixtures to it. It's going to run my same inspect tests, but then it's going to also run another set of inspect tests that our Unix teams have defined and our security teams have defined. So I don't want a cookbook to change our default SSH port. I don't want them to change root users' privileges or several other things that our Unix team and our security teams don't want people to do with cookbooks. So once it passes all of those, we're comfortable. We can say, all right, promote to stage, promote to production. So now it's in production. What does that mean? It's in the Chef supermarket. Again, food related. So once it's in the supermarket, the next converge, on the next 30 minutes, when a host phones home, it's going to pick up that new version of the cookbook, and now 8.5.45 is going to be applied to hundreds of Tomcat containers all at once. I don't have to put in tickets. I don't have to go and talk with teams and make sure that they're ready to go because I've tested it. I know it's going to work with all the different scenarios that we've laid out. So that brings us to our last stage, profit. That's what I just did. I sit back and do nothing now. I wait for things to hopefully not break. And they never do. So this system has worked really great, but it's been a long, long, long road to get there. And there's a lot of headaches. And what I want to talk about now is kind of the road bumps we've had along the way. And one of the things I'm going to hit on is it's really important up front to set good strategies and good clearly defined roles. And because if you don't, people don't do them. You know, at a large organization, it's hard to bring everyone on board with something as drastically different as this. So the road bumps we've been running into along the way. Culture change is the biggest one. As I said, we normally had web administrators were siloed over here. They held the configuration away from developers. Developers never saw the configuration of their containers. They never got to be part of that. I mean, they had input, but they never got to be part of it. Then you had your developers over here. Well, we're kind of blurring those lines now. I don't really consider myself a web administrator anymore. I am a developer, which is a huge change for a lot of folks at MasterCard. We have a lot of people who, a lot of web administrators who, they've never done a pull request. Some of them have never even heard of a pull request. Now we do everything through pull requests. We change config states. We change our code. Everything is done through that. So it's a huge culture change and a huge mindset change. So it's really important to set those clear, defined roles up front and set good strategies and process around this. So the next thing we ran into is just too many competing visions for how this should all work. Five, maybe 8 years ago, when some really high up people at MasterCard said, all right, we need to automate. We got to automate everything. Well, that meant different things to a lot of different groups. Some people went in a direction of, all right, let's just automate deployments to legacy built stuff. Some people went to, all right, we got to figure out a way to provision VMs faster, and on and on and on, just different things. Well, you have all these different groups having different visions, making different products. It makes it really difficult to stitch those things together. And that's why I said at the beginning, it's really important to set those overall goals, those overall strategies, because if you don't, you don't end up with a holistic approach like we have now. So the next problem we're running into now, this is a big one, is what do you do with legacy? I can't just tell Chef, hey, go manage that existing Tomcat container because there's no configuration state defined for it, right? I've got this Tomcat 6 instance still laying around there. I can't just say, all right, Chef, manage it. So what we're doing is we're developing a set of scripts and a set of Jenkins pipelines that will actually look at and examine the existing configuration and spit out a JSON configuration state that will feed into my cookbook. So it's a long process. Our scripts are doing good, but it's just a matter of getting teams to use them and convert over their existing stuff from manually maintained to machine managed. And that's been a struggle. Like I said, we have thousands of containers, so it's a long, long road. So the next thing that's really important, now these guiding principles that I'm going to talk about, these are not MasterCard, full disclosure. These are my guiding principles that I've kind of adopted since starting on this. So the first one, code is everything. Everything is code. If you're going to automate, do it in code. And that code needs to be easy to read and easy to maintain. If not, you're going to be maintaining it forever. The next one, a single path to production. And what I mean here is that pipeline. I don't want to allow teams to inject a configuration state into stage or production without first testing it in dev. We have to lock those down. And our pipeline does that. It's great. They can't say, all right, I want to put. I have this emergency change. I need to push it into production now. Nope. You have to start in dev. You have to go through the pipeline. Because when we introduce change, we end up with configuration drift. And down the line, we end up with downtime and bad times. So this next one kind of goes hand in hand with the single path to production, but shift risk left. You want to make your lowest of the low environments, my CMSDK on my local, as close as I possibly can to my real live production. Because if I don't, those inspect tests that I defined, they're not going to apply. They're going to be useless. Okay. So you want to make those lower environments as close as possible as you can to production so that you can get a like-for-like test throughout the whole thing. So how can you get started on doing this at your organization? So set those guiding principles and those strategies. I can't tell you what they're going to be because every organization is different. Everybody has different needs. But it's important to examine what you currently have and where you want to be and set some strategies to get there. So next, choose a tool set that fits your needs. Like I said, there's a ton of config management tools out there. They all have their pros and cons. Just examine them. A lot of them have free versions that you can look at and play with. So it's important to pick one that fits your needs and to use it the right way. One thing we're fighting is a lot of folks want to use Chef as almost like cron. Because like I said, it runs every 30 minutes. They're going to say, oh, I want it to run this script. No. Chef is a config management tool. You describe your config. Salt is remote execution. You use Salt for that. And some people try to abuse that here at MasterCard too. So it's important to choose that tool set and to use it in the correct way. So start small. Don't try to, you know, bite off this huge chunk and this huge issue. Start by, you know, creating a directory that you always have to create over and over again. Start by deploying my Java installation or just putting down my laying down my binary distribution. Something easy and simple that you can do. So the next one, this has been really cool, and I know I'm talking to Apache Software Foundation, but foster a community in your corporation for this. This has been one of the coolest aspects of how what we've been doing. So we set up a series of FlowDock and boards. And if you don't know what FlowDock is, it's a Slack clone. That's what the approved one here at MasterCard was. But we set up a lot of boards. We have meetups. We have brown bag sessions and training, all sorts of things to talk with our developers and to talk with our service delivery teams, our web administrators, to kind of get them involved and get them contributing to the code. Because, you know, while we can't be completely open source, I can't put my Tomcat cookbook on GitHub, but we do want to have that inner source community where, if a developer wants to contribute code to my Tomcat cookbook, great. I hope they do. It makes my life easier. So fostering that community has been really amazing. Like I said, on our FlowDock channel, we kind of started it as a place where people can just ask questions. Hey, this thing broke. You guys broke my Tomcat container. Fix it. But what we started seeing was our developers, our web administrators across the globe, they were actually answering each other and helping each other out, which was amazing because I didn't have to jump on at 3 in the morning because someone over in Pune has done this before as a developer and they can answer that question. It's great. So here's some helpful links to get you started. I will post this slide deck somewhere or you can contact me and I will give you these links. These are really just the tools that we use at MasterCard. I'm really partial to this learn.chef.io site. They have a ton of really great tracks that you can follow. And it's all free, which is great, too. So yeah, visit these links, check out these tools, and start using them in your organization, because they have been huge for us at MasterCard. So that's it for me. My name is Steve Sanders. Here's my email. Please feel free to talk to me about this. I am extremely passionate about this. I will talk about this anytime, anywhere, with anybody. So ask away. And questions now, if we have time. We should.
Yeah, we do have time.
So standardization of your hardware.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like if you're having a standard config that you roll out, kind of implies that it's going to run well everywhere.
Generally, yes.
Is that part of the process? Did you?
Yes. So our Unix administration team is developing, or well, they have an infrastructure as code application that they're calling, and yes, it does provision the VMs that we run on. So yeah, and those are all identical from the same image, same hardware, same hardware in production. You know, we get a little beefier as we go along. So yeah, that was absolutely a consideration. And that was really important, as I said earlier, you know, having those competing visions that we had to pair. You know, we had to make sure that the VMs and the process that they were doing was compatible with what our cookbooks were doing and how we're laying down the configuration. So absolutely as a consideration. Yes, Bob.
With your Jenkins pipeline that you talked about going through the process of having one cap production.
Yes.
In the case where something fails, what's your rollback strategy or how we roll forward? Can you talk about that?
So we push out a change and it's broken something?
Say it's a compliance test or maybe broken production, either one of those scenarios, I'd be interested in.
So really it's the exact same thing as what I did in my demo. I update my attributes and I can push it up.
It's rolled forward, then essentially you go through the process.
Yep, exactly.
Is there any shortcuts if it's 4 hours or however long?
We do have a break class procedure, yes. But we have yet to have to actually use it.
That's good.
Which is really great. But yes, we do have that procedure in place. I see Dan's giving me an iffy eye there. Maybe half of once.
Chris. I saw when you ran your kitchen verify.
Mm-hmm.
The count of tests it did was something like 100.
109, yes.
And the ones that I could see on the screen looked mostly like poking at configuration values and just making sure you weren't doing anything colossally stupid. And then you also mentioned that when you run that verification process in, I think it was staging, you said,
mm-hmm.
that's when you add, you know, your additional security checks and, you know, the Unix administrators have their suite of tests.
Mm-hmm.
At any stage, do you have a set of application tests for, like, acceptance testing?
Yes. I highly encourage application teams to do it, but they are responsible for developing that.
Okay. So in this example, that didn't exist?
Yes.
Okay.
One thing that we do encourage, so as I said, it's not just the Tomcat cookbook. There's application-level cookbooks as well that apply their application configuration. So maybe they're pulling down a properties file or an extra jar that they want to stick in the live, something like that. Well, they can wrap around my Tomcat cookbook and include it, and then that way they can define their own test fixtures and their own inspect tests on top of mine as well. So yeah, that's something we encourage. Haven't really seen a huge adoption of it yet, but those...
That seems hard.
Yes, that's one of the culture changes too as well, not just for our web administrators, but our developers who are used to doing Java. They're like, what, I got to learn Ruby now? That's ridiculous, but I really like Ruby. If you haven't used it, I find it very easy and simple to work with. It's pretty readable, but a lot of people do get a little scared off once they hear they have to learn a new language. But that's why we do hold those brown bag sessions with developers and training things, and we have those community outreach programs to work with them. I've worked with a ton of our development teams to do just that and develop wrapper cookbooks that will have their own set of fixtures and inspect tests. Yeah.
So our web application typically goes hand to hand with database changes. How do you handle that? Like we have just databases for development tests and production. Mm-hmm. So when you go through the process, do you have scripts to update the database, or how do you do that?
Yeah, so the database is actually defined in the configuration state. So each environment, so my dev, my staging, my production, can have different tweaks, like my different database connection URL and different credentials and things like that. So they're going to have a config state for dev, a config state for stage, and a config state for production. They're going to be identical except for things just like that, because we have that exact same scenario. We don't have dev, stage, and production all talking to the same database. They do have their own separate ones.
But what about the differences in the database? So sometimes you need to create new tables or alter tables or...
So for that, I know there are a couple teams who use Flyway and are actually executing Flyway through Chef to apply changes to their database using Chef, or I think a few of them use Salt to do remote execution, to do that on the fly. But typically, I don't have a ton of visibility into the database side, but I know that's how generally most folks are doing it, is with Flyway that I've seen.
So once things get to you, the databases are already configured and ready to
in general,
accept
yes.
your new web application.
Yes, in general. Thanks. Yeah, at MasterCraft there's a lot of separation of duties. There's a whole DBA team, there's our developers, and you know, so yeah, it's fairly separated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I assume performance testing is part of the suite of things you run through to make sure that change doesn't push you over, say, to the point where your standard hardware configuration doesn't support, your SLA falls. Do you have certain criteria that you have to maintain?
So
how do you measure that?
That generally falls on the application side of things. I can see if an inspect test starts taking a lot longer. It's not something we actually codify, but we have a bunch of different tools that we use to monitor performance and that sort of thing. So not in this scenario, no, we don't specifically, but it's something I would like to get into, doing benchmarks and that sort of thing to make sure that we're still passing it. So we're not there quite yet. Yes?
If you push out your change to, for example, upgrade all the instances of Tomcat to a new version, how do you prevent, I assume that all of the servers are on the same schedule for doing their converging. How do you prevent them all going down at the same exact time and giving you a service outage?
Yeah, so there's a couple ways that we do that. One, they're not actually on the exact same schedule.
Okay.
The timing of when Chef converges, it's 30-ish minutes. and it also is depending on, it's 30 minutes from when Chef Client was actually installed. So if it was actually installed on 2:33 in the afternoon, it's going to converge on 3:03. So all of them are a bit staggered, but one way we also do that is teams that don't want that sort of thing to happen in production, they can actually pin to a version of the cookbook, and then we say, hey, we've released this new version of the cookbook, update your pins to use that new version. So our big applications that don't want those restarts, they typically version pin.
And then is that version pin on a per host basis, or is that on a per service basis?
Per service, yes.
Okay.
They define that in their environment configuration state.
Okay, they manage exactly when each host moves, and then they pin probably to the new version.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's also possible, Chris, with with Chef configured in the client server layout, if you send it, I think it's a user one signal to the Chef client process, it'll immediately convert regardless of what the schedule is.
Yes.
Okay, but there's no coordination between any of the hosts to say, like, I'd really like it if no more than 10% of my hosts are restarting at a time or something like that.
No,
there isn't.
Okay.
You usually have a higher level orchestrator for something like that.
Did you have any trouble getting your upper management to, it seems like the potential for a disaster is greater. You know, you're changing a bunch of things all at once, and I was just wondering whether people were risk-averse and had to be convinced.
Absolutely. I wasn't part of that convincing. That would probably be Mr. Ruggieri back there. I'm not sure if he could speak on that, but yeah, absolutely. But you have these guardrails in place. That JSON schema that I spoke about is a huge part of that. We don't allow people to shoot themselves in the foot because they can't define stupid configs.
The bigger risk is like an Equifax breach again, and they don't update their servers. Totally too hard.
Right. Absolutely. Exactly. Yep. No. Absolutely.
That's one of the conversations. The bigger tragedy is having a breach because we were even. I mean, Equifax. What that was 3 months after.
Oh,
the
man, that's a long time.
I thought it was only 3 months, but even then, that's the bigger risk these days.
Yeah. Yeah, part of the way that you can sell this to management is by saying, I mean, as Steve described at the beginning, they kind of had what was the Wild West in production, where you could never be sure what was on any host without logging into it and looking. And you could just point to that and say, does this seem safe?
Yeah.
Because exactly. Because we're not moving to a risky position. We're
right.
Starting from a risky position.
Yeah, right.
And actually moving to a less risky position,
yeah, that's
even
true.
Though it kind of sounds... Yeah. It sounds scary.
It does.
All automation is scary. There's always that potential for...
Yeah.
It is. It absolutely is. But
yeah.
Ultimately, it does put us in a better position.
I think in a way, you're trading an outage risk, your security risk for an outage risk, basically. So, I think people want the security risk a lot less these days, so they prefer to be out, I don't know, 5 minutes or something.
Yeah.
Maybe, but it's not going to happen anyway. Rather than have a huge breach that gets into the press or whatever. Yeah, so.
All right, any other questions? All right, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.